Now, I'm joined in the studio by Oliver DeRose to talk about his book, Suburban Socialism. Now, Oliver grew up in Brentwood and he went to study politics at the University of Exeter before studying political theory at the University of Oxford. So a very good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Now, as I mentioned, you studied politics, but what age were you when politics started to interest you? And was there a particular politician that grabbed your interest?
Yeah, great question. I mean, I was actually interested in politics around sixth form, but from a very different kind of persuasion. So when I was around 17, 18, I was actually quite conservative. You know, both my parents are conservative voters, and that was kind of how I was interested in politics. But it was only really when I went to uni and, you know, over the next kind of 4 to 5 years that I started to embrace a different kind of politics, I guess. Meet new people with new experiences. I kind of did fall out of love, actually, with politics for a while, maybe a bit apathetic, thinking that, you know, a lot of the parties were quite similar. There wasn't really a party that I thought was offering anything new. And this kind of period of apathy did actually help me to kind of take a step back and maybe take a step back from my environment and think of new ideas and theories. And I guess you could say the process of radicalization went pretty quickly from then on, when I kind of went to this kind of like leftward direction. And it wasn't really only until maybe the end of my uni days where I would identify myself as, say, like a socialist or left wing. And, you know, you said influences. I mean, first of all, I said the influences are actually just friends. You know, people in my course or people outside of my course who had these really, you know, unique experiences and views of the world. And I think people do forget that, like, it's not just politicians who like, inspire people. It is also just your friends and people around you. However, to completely contradict that, there definitely was one politician who you know, spoke to me in a way, and it's a bit cliche, but it was Jeremy Corbyn. You know, I think there's a politician who was honest, who had integrity, who wasn't afraid to speak his mind, and kind of offered this very new, this fresh, you know, enthusiasm and hope for a lot of people that there was kind of a new and exciting way to run the country. You know, one built on care and compassion, a radical Labour Party that people could vote for. And I you know, we saw that in 2017 when we added 3 million votes. Obviously, the 2 years after was a bit less successful. But yes, yeah, so I'd say someone like Jeremy Corbyn really inspired me. And today, there's people like Zara Sultana who are, you know, a lot of us look up to.
What did you do after you left Oxford?
So I went to work for the Labour Party in 2018, I think I finished. So I went into Parliament, worked for a Labour MP there, you know, which was an interesting insight into how things work. It was quite an exciting time because obviously it was during the whole Brexit saga, so that kind of dominated the political terrain. In a way, I think we kind of look back now and think, God, that really just took up everybody's political kind of mind for ages, really polarized people. And I've been doing that since, but I also work at a university called SOAS in London. We're doing some research into criminal justice systems and reforms and that kind of stuff. So, you know, different projects, yeah.
The book is called Suburban Socialism, and in 2019 you stood as a Labour Party candidate for Brentwood and Ongar, which is one of the safest Conservative seats in the UK. What made you want to write about it?
Yes, so as you said, I was the 2019 candidate, the Labour Party candidate for Brentwood and Ongar. And okay, we all know Brentwood and Ongar, very safe Conservative seat, relatively affluent. And, you know, we were up against a 24,000 majority in the 2019 election. We were essentially, you know, a bunch of left-wing weirdos in this very conservative suburbia. And, you know, nobody thought we were going to win. Absolutely nobody expected us to win. They were correct. We did not win. The Tories actually extended their majority. Alex Burkhardt is the MP. he extended it to 29,000, I think it was. And so, you know, only after a few weeks of, you know, crying and banging your head against the wall, thinking what went wrong, did I kind of try and reflect on why we lost. And really not even why we lost, but the idea of this inevitability of defeat. Because I think a lot of us, you know, we're a small Labour, small kind of team of activists, even though the party's actually quite large in Brentwood. And, you know, we didn't resign ourselves in terms of, you know, idleness. You know, there was a small and dedicated team that, that knocked on doors for hours in the pouring rain. But really, the kind of inevitability and the resignation was more psychological, because, you know, none of us thought we were going to win. We spent most of our time actually campaigning elsewhere in seats that we thought we could win. And I think, you know, this was encapsulated when at the election count, which is where the book starts, where this conservative councillor came up to me and said, look, you know, I told you socialism will never work. You'll never get socialism in a place like Brentwood. You'll understand when you get older. You know, apart from quite patronising.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit.
No, I won't name them. A little bit patronising. But what was more annoying was actually we kind of legitimised what he was saying, because, yeah, we had in a way given up because we didn't think we were going to win. So this book is a desire to almost embrace naivety, to say, how can we turn certain defeat into some kind of radical victory? And that means going beyond our narrow experiences of Brentwood and looking beyond and thinking, what would it mean to win across the suburban terrain? And what are the challenges of a left-wing campaign in the suburbs? And what will it take? You know, what kind of strategic revolution do we need to win? And that's why I wrote the book. And it's it looks at the challenges of left-wing electoralism and thinks of a vision of socialism in the suburbs, which I think a lot of the left rarely think about. But it's something that we do need to think about.
It must be really difficult when you go and knock on doors. I can't imagine anything worse, actually. And people are fixed in their mind. The challenge is to actually get people to actually read or just listen must be really difficult, because you've got something you want to say and new ideas, but people are very closed off.
Sure. I actually think there's a bit of a tension here, because it's very easy for me to say, oh, you know, you should change your mind. You should listen to me. When actually I'm probably, you know, I'm quite stubborn as well. I can't really see me changing my views. So it's almost this, how do I tell a voter to, you know, God, just open your mind, just listen to me. When really actually it's the candidate or the, you know, the politician, I'm not a politician, but the people trying to represent constituents, they're the ones who should be listening, right, to the constituents. And how do you do that at the same time as thinking that I genuinely believe in this kind of society and you don't agree with me. So how do I kind of, how do we change people's minds in that way without kind of thinking that you're the harbinger of all knowledge kind of thing. And to answer your first question about, you know, how difficult it is to canvass, there's a chapter called Suburban Capitalism, which I kind of go through this experience of canvassing. And why is it that it's so difficult? And one of the reasons is quite circular. You know, I didn't get that much anger. I got a lot of indifference. And kind of what you said, that people knew how they were going to vote. And it's also just because, like, hardly anybody is in during the day. And one of the reasons for that is everybody's working, because everybody spends all their life working, not always doing stuff they want to do. It would be great if we had more time to, you know, spend time with our family, to exercise community care, or just, you know, have fun. And obviously, you know, that sounds a bit utopian and naive, but this is kind of one of the visions of a socialist society where we don't have to work all of the time, where instead we kind of, you know, we share in the collective products what we produce. And so this is that circularity is one of the key arguments we were trying to make, is that why is it that all of us are spending so much of our time working? And I couldn't convince people of that because they're not in, because they're spending all of their time working. And another reason, you know, most of the time when people did answer the door, it was predominantly women, because, you know, there's a vast inequality of reproductive labour, you know, people looking after their kids, you know, and it's predominantly women who share that burden. And that's another thing we were trying to, like, equalise. We wanted to distribute this idea of care. But just on how do we kind of change this, the reason why in the book I focus less on this is why socialism is correct, you should listen. Instead, I try and explore ways in which we can all show acts of suburban solidarity with each other. So one example is mutual aid, which has, you know, exploded since COVID. I think what mutual aid shows is that, you know, there is another way of living, which is one based on unconditional support for each other. You know, your health is dependent on mine, mine on yours. And that is the tradition of mutual aid. And, you know, people who are engaging in mutual aid, I think, are learning this by themselves. It doesn't take like an orator to say, you know, you need socialism. It's actually, socialism is in practice here. You're experiencing it. And I don't know, you know, it's the longer term effects that we're hoping for. Will this cultivate a kind of a new way of thinking where we do provide, you know, services and resources based on some kind of collective ownership rather than, you know, this competitive individualistic economy in which we live today? So that's what I try and do in the book, you know, challenging suburban capitalism through acts of suburban solidarity. And mutual aid is one good example.
Now, you are doing an event at Waterstones on Monday. What time are you going to be there?
That is at 7,
yep.
I think.
7 p.m.
Yeah, 7 p.m. 7 a.m. At Waterstones on Brentwood High Street. Anyone is welcome. One of the things I really try and do in the book is make it palatable to people across the political spectrum. I think, obviously, it's probably more suitable to people with, you know, kind of the sympathy for left-wing politics. However, I think it is interesting for people across the political spectrum. So this event, a chance, you know, for I'll be in conversation with someone called Richard Millward, the chair of the Labour Party. And it's a chance for anyone to come and ask questions and to buy a copy if you want.
Yes, buy a copy. That's what we always like. Do you think we still need to get a lot more younger people interested in politics, and how do we do it? Politics has just got such a bad press. I think in the last, definitely in the last 5 years, it's really, really gone downhill, and the mistrust for politicians as well.
Absolutely. So first of all, to say that young people have never had it worse, and it's only going to get worse, especially in terms of, you know, the housing crisis and inequality. Back in, you know, I think my parents, they were able to buy a house and get a mortgage because it came with, like, with their job. And when they explained this to me, I'm like, what? That doesn't make any sense. How is that possible? And, you know, there was a way in which you could climb this so-called ladder, even though I don't think these ladders should exist. There was a way of kind of doing it. Whereas now, you know, the idea of a young person buying their own home is very rare. Very rare. And, you know, how can we be told these incentives exist for us? If you work hard, you know, knuckle down. These rules don't exist, especially in terms of tuition fees as well. You know, my interest rate is going up and up and up. I'm barely paying off the interest rate. And no party at the moment is doing what the Labour Party wanted to do in 2019, 2017, which is to abolish tuition fees. And the main one is the climate crisis. Young people, you know, are trying to get their heads around a future in 50 or 60 years where the world will become uninhabitable. So there's this tension between the fact that young people, if there's one group of people that need to be interested in politics, it is the younger generation.
Yeah.
But they are the ones being systematically kind of marginalized and excluded, and their voices aren't heard. There is, I think, cause for some optimism in this kind of in this arena. First of all, if you look at the parliamentarians, you know, there are young MPs. Again, I'm going to mention Zara Sultana, and there's also Nadia Woodson. Like, there are some young MPs out there, you know, trying to represent young people. However, what I'd say is where young people can have the biggest impact, I actually think, is outside of electoral politics, or at least, you know, politics is an ensemble. It's about fighting in multiple arenas at once. And where I've kind of seen the most passion and the biggest change is on a local level outside of the electoral arena, not just in mutual aid, you know, going on strikes, protesting. We saw with the Black Lives Matter movement, which was a heavily youthful, you know, movement. Yeah. And I think what that does is it sends a message to politicians that says, you will not be able to win without us. You know, you can't take us for granted. I'm saying us. I feel like I'm 27 now, so I feel like I'm on the cusp. I don't think I can say young anymore, but I'm going to say we just to make myself feel better. They can't win without us. And so I know it's difficult. As I said, the impending crises, intersecting crises that face us. And just lastly, though, I would say I don't like this idea of kind of dividing the youth and, say, the elderly, let alone the people in between, because it's not just as simple as being young or old. What I'm kind of keen on is a class analysis as well. You know, so the reason why young people are so the future of young people is in jeopardy is the same reason why, you know, we have a care crisis where people can't afford to retire. We have huge inequality in the elderly population. You know, a lot of them are millionaires. A lot, though, are in fuel poverty.
Yeah.
And so how can we build these coalitions between young people who are excluded from the housing market, the employment market, and more vulnerable people in the elderly population? And that's part of what kind of suburban socialism is all about.
Excellent. It's been great to talk to you.
Thank you so
much. Really, really
me.
Interesting. You'll have to come back.
For sure.
The book is called Suburban Socialism. Oliver will be at Waterstone 7 p.m. on Monday, and there'll be chances to have questions if you'd like to have a chat as well. And obviously, you've got, who is the other person that's going to be there again?
It'll be Richard Millwood.
Yeah.
Yes, which I'm sure many of you will know. Yes.
Excellent. So it's great to talk to you, and thank you very much for my copy, which I'll be reading, because I love a proper book. There's nothing beats a proper book. Don't, I mean, you've got your Kindles and it's over. Oh, no.
You need a hardback. Yeah. You need a proper book.
Proper book. Yeah. Lovely to talk to you. Thanks very much.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome.